dangerous, playing down that clock in the last minute. I just thought, here comes the penalty.
I was thinking of you.
44-43.
Yeah.
But they backed themselves.
And for me, what was notable was Bordeaux's pack is a lot more workmanlike, blue collar. The names were in the Toulouse pack, you know.
That made for all the drama and the intensity, because you felt the referees were backing themselves on the field of play as much as the players were. Money magic on show in Japan.
What do you mean? Why do you say it like that?
I don't know. Get started on Friday night. Incredible game. Investec Champions Cup quarterfinals. Johan van Kronsbaard. We've claimed them as a South African team. They got four South Africans in the 23. They got Johan van Kron there, former Bulls, former Springbok assistant coach. A little bit of Irish in him. Went to Munster for 5 years. Succeeded Rassie and Jacques there. Up against the Northampton Saints. Just one of the most incredible games to start the weekend off. And then to finish, the one that I was waiting for, 4 o'clock sales, kickoff, the anticipation of a Springbok All Black, like World Cup final, quarterfinal, Bordeaux at home against Toulouse, kind of, and both delivered in very different fashions. We're going to talk about the other two in between, because they had a South African influence, Jacques Nienaber at Leinster, Franco Smith at Glasgow. But wow, from the Friday night to the Sunday, Investec always sell this thing as out of the ordinary. And for me, both that opening game and that last one, it was out of the ordinary. It was extraordinary rugby. It is the toughest club competition in the world. And sitting back, and you just think, this is what it takes to... And that was just the quarterfinals. There's still a semi-final to go in the first week of May, and then into the finals, obviously north of Spain, 23rd, 24th of May, to determine the winner. But just... incredible rugby, and anyone who tells me they want to fix the game. Now, forget our Springbok bias, our Stormers, Bulls bias, our Sharks, Lions bias, our South African bias. Anyone who wants to fix the game or think there's something wrong with the game, go and watch Northampton, go to the Rec and lose 43-41, and then go and watch Bordeaux entertain and host to lose and win 30-15 and tell me there's anything wrong with rugby union.
No, I don't think there is anything wrong with it. I don't think there's been anything wrong with it for a long time. I would pretty much have kept what we had when George Smith and Richie McCaw were doing great things at the breakdown in the early 2000s. I thought they had it great there. Then we started with what did they call them? Experimental law variations, was it? Something along those lines. Anyway, the game's in great shape when you just let the boys get on and play. And for me, one of the highlights of the weekend, in my personal opinion, was Andrew Brace, the referee in the Northampton-Bath game. I think it was Alfie Barbary, is that his name, who came on in the second half and made a big tackle on Pollock. And in the tackle, Pollock gets sort of upended and dumped on his back. And everybody in the crowd is, you know, there's an uproar. All the Northampton fans are baying for blood. They want to see a card. And Andrew Brace just says, there was nothing in it, mate. It's a penalty. It's nothing more than that, in my opinion. The TMO showed the replay. The replay was played again and again.
And again.
And again. And Andy Brace just stuck with his guns and said, nope, nothing. And there really wasn't anything in it, mate. Pollock was fine. There was no malice in it whatsoever. And they carried on playing, and it was fabulous to see. I really enjoyed that about it. And they let the rugby guys determine the result in that match. And I thought that they did superbly in it. And that was the sort of pattern throughout the weekend. All of those games were determined by the guys on the field, which I loved.
I also felt that the match officiating in every game was kind of real.
Mm.
You had Matthew Carley saying, I got the decision wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I called it too early.
Precisely,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Then I got another one wrong there. And you had the French say, so that's three wrong calls in the first 5 minutes. But his thing was, we get in the right call, mate.
Correct.
And then it kind of like settled. And the emotion that there was in that Bath Saints game.
Yeah.
The emotion in Bordeaux. I mean, that was World Cup playoff stuff. It was intense. And then Glasgow. I've seen many, many a referee buckle under that kind of expectation and it goes to the home team in the last 5 minutes. There was no such shenanigans there. When you look at the match at the Aviva in Dublin, the two yellow cards were warranted. It was just, you just felt that this was a game also that was determined by what they saw on the field. I love the comment also from Carly was when he said to one of the French players, "Do you trust your teammates? I trust mine." The TMO says the ball was out, and then it showed it was out. The Louis Bielberry, when he ran back and made the incredible save to get the ball back into touch, and it showed his foot was slightly in touch. So that made for all the drama and the intensity because you felt the referees were backing themselves on the field of play as much as the players were. And in those high-intensity games, you're also going to get mistakes. It's like these heavyweights force, through the pressure, they force mistakes that you wouldn't ordinarily see.
Yeah.
So victories for Bath, first time in 20 years they're going through to a semi-final. They'll play that semi-final in the city of Bordeaux where they won it. And the first British team to ever win it, 1997-98.
They played Brive or something, right?
They played Brive, yeah. Then you get in Glasgow, would have had this incredible last 16 at home, last 8 at home, last 4 at Murrayfield because it's country origin that wins depending on your seedings. They've gone through unbeaten, second seeded, edged the Bulls. The big shock for me was how comfortably, I know it was only 3 points on the scoreboard, but how comfortably Toulon rolled them given how vulnerable Toulon had looked against the Stormers, which is a fill-up for UX, that maybe we're not that far off, okay? And Leinster, we expected them to beat Sale, which they did quite comfortably. I had Bath to win, but not in that kind of way. And also had Bordeaux to win. But at 15-5, I thought, I think the real Toulouse is pitched up. But Bordeaux, definitely the team at the moment in France and also in the Investor Champions Cup. And for me, the best club team in the world at the moment.
I mean, with Jason Statham at 9, they are pretty much unstoppable. I mean, he was on fire, old Maxime Lucu. He had a hell of a game. And I thought that the Bordeaux halfbacks definitely outplayed the Toulouse halfbacks. I thought at the beginning, I thought Jalibert took a few options that actually kept Toulouse in that game. There were moments where Toulouse's sort of keep ball approach was creating turnover transition opportunities for Bordeaux to have a go. And I felt like Jalibert let them off the hook a few times with some of his options, but they cleaned that all up. And in the second half, they just powered away. What a fabulous, fabulous match. The core of the French national team is in those two sides. And then you've got some really great players, some foreigners that kind of add their own muscle to that. A guy you mentioned earlier, Jack Willis, just absolutely superb in and around the breakdown. Fearsome contester. And a guy that could definitely boost England if they ever decided to open their doors to overseas-based players. So all around, mate. Every game was different in the way that it played out. Like, they weren't all test match caliber, I would say. The Bordeaux-Toulouse game was on that level of physicality. I thought the Bath-Northampton game really showcased the best of the Prem in terms of it being very technical and being able to cut defences to pieces, high-octane stuff. But just looking forward to those games reminded me of the days where we used to look forward to a Brumbies-Crusaders game. Like, there wasn't a South African team involved, but there was something special about the two sides in the match.
Yeah, I'm very different. Like, when I watched the Northampton Bath game, it did have a bit of a Super Rugby feel to it in two very good teams going with great skills, scoring great tries. I mean, 9 tries in the first half, but then it kind of settled for that second half and it was a real bun fight. And I mean, Bath had to dig deep to win that. And they got the winning 7-pointer with 3 minutes to play. And then they defaulted to test rugby. Dangerous, playing down that clock in the last minute. I just thought, here comes the penalty.
I was thinking of you.
44, 43.
Yeah.
But they back themselves. And then kind of the wind is a factor in Scotland. But the Glasgow-Toulon game as a spectacle was disappointing. But just a wonderful result for the competition. And as Jacques Grenot, the CEO, was texting him in the week, he got to go to most of the games. And he said, the beauty of the Investec Champions Cup is you can't write the script beforehand. And I actually did. For the Sunday Times column, because of deadlines.
He's calling you a liar, Jacques.
Because of deadlines, I had written that there could be so many South Africans in the semifinal in terms of players and coaches. And I had put Franco Smith and Kyle Steyn from Glasgow as down to be there in the semifinals.
Brilliant.
So, yes, Jacques, you cannot write the script because it has to play out on the field. And I did. And people reading that Sunday Times would say, does he not know that Glasgow lost? I had to qualify it, but at the time of writing, I hate that kind of line, at the time of writing. What time did you put that paper to bed? The game was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But I felt that game was cool to watch as a neutral. And then we always knew Leinster at home was going to be too strong for Sale Sharks. It doesn't help they got the two cards. But comes to Sunday's one, it had that expectation, and I felt it delivered. You know, I listened to the commentators. They said the second half is when it's opened up. That's maybe the more kind of flamboyant excitement and the skill level. But that first half was Springboks All Blacks, 40 minutes of... It reminded me of a great All Black team coming here and just pounding us, but somehow our defense kept them out. And when that first 20 minutes came and they basically kept to lose at bay, you just knew there was something special there. And even at 15-5, I didn't feel the momentum was ever with Toulouse. And you look at who's in that Toulouse side.
Class.
I mean, it's Intermac at 10. It's the great man, Antoine Dupont at 9. Ramos, you look at their winners, their centers. Then you look at who's in that pack. But it was the day of the understudies, eh? Jalibert at 10 and Luku. Everyone talks Dupont. I remember Luku coming on and playing a cracker when France beat Ireland 2 seasons ago. And all people spoke about was Dupont, who had gone off quite early in the game. This was a case of you may be the national captain, I may be the understudy, but Luku gave the masterclass. When your scrum off is the top tackler with 18 and your fluff, Jalibert, is your top carrier with 17.
Yeah.
You know how they played their game and how they controlled it. And I think for club rugby, and it doesn't necessarily transfer to France who won the World Cup, but for club rugby, this was such a compliment to the top 14 and to those two great teams. And then to get Toulon, who were flourishing at 11th, to get them to knock over the Stormers, controversially, but they beat them. They scored 4 tries against them, 28-27. And then to knock over Glasgow Warriors in Scotstown, 22-19. That's a team that's 11th, knocking over 1 and 2 in the URC.
Yeah, and I mean, you said that that game of the four was probably the one that underwhelmed a bit in terms of entertainment value. And it's quite interesting that that was the game that featured two teams that decided to put down their machine guns and settle this contest with their fists, in the sense that they shelved their kicking game. There was a total of 25 kicks in that match, but there were more than 325 carries. So both of those teams went out of their way to play keep ball, to have a full go at each other through the front door. And like you said, the outcome was probably the least entertaining of the matches.
If you look at where it's positioned, I mean, we talk club. What is the transferal into Test rugby? We've got England coming, playing the Springboks, 4th of July. Johannesburg will be there. It's going to be a great occasion to start the first ever Nations Championship where points are allocated to wins. We know it all culminates with a great weekend. I think it's going to be at Twickenham where 6 plays 6 down to 1 plays 1 Friday, Saturday and Sunday night, Sunday afternoon. Is it just as easy as a transferal, or do people need to also understand club rugby is different to Test rugby, and Bath does not necessarily represent the best of England, and neither does Northampton Saints, given who plays for those sides. Mm-hmm. Although there are a lot of individuals that are going to be in, say, the England national team. And then equally, Bordeaux and Toulouse, there's a core of the French team there, but there are significant players who aren't playing for France that are involved.
No, totally, 100%. I don't think it's the same as the era that we had with the Crusaders and the Bulls, and the Bulls winning 3 championships and the Springboks being at their best during that period as well. I think there are a few more moving parts in European rugby with the influx of foreign players. So I expect France to be strong. France are already strong. And for me, what was notable was Bordeaux's pack is a lot more workman-like, blue-collar. The names were in the Toulouse pack, you know. And I thought that Bordeaux really acquitted themselves well there. So it may be a sort of a changing of the guard in a sense, and that'll only strengthen France. I think France are obviously going to be a serious contender in the Test arena, as they already are. The question marks are around Ireland. Leinster need to continue to win because they are the sort of core of that Irish team, and they've had a bit of a roller coaster season.
If you looked at the impact of a guy like Carlo Sardi, because now we have to look South African presence and kind of South African influence. Carlo Sardi, tight head prop. He got 48 minutes again. And then Jan Tian Jacobs, 21 years old. He played for the Junior Box in 2024. He went over to France, played Pro 12, and now he's back. And he's playing for Bordeaux. He came in for the last 12 minutes, and he's back playing in a game of that magnitude. I know from just how we've seen coaches run players here. Do you think Tian Jacobs at 21 would have been playing in any URC team in this country, yet he's playing for Bordeaux, the best club team in the world?
No, I don't think he would have been playing for anybody here. And I think it's fabulous that he got the opportunity to go out and be in such a massive European Champions Cup playoff match. Huge, huge opportunity for him. And he acquitted himself well as well. So I think there's definitely opportunity for guys who get spotted by the French clubs to experience what that's like. And in terms of club rugby, this is pretty much as high as it gets.
Sadi, do you see him playing for the Box this year?
I mean, I don't know who's going to play for the Box this year. I think Russie could definitely... It wouldn't shock me if he picked him. I think it's a long shot. But, I mean, he's Quadzilla, isn't he? He's another version of Wilco Lowe.
Jeez, at one stage when they showed a reverse angle of the packs going down, and I thought, is Wilco now playing for Bordeaux like he's moonlighting? I mean, this he's a beast.
No, he's a monster. He's an absolute monster. I don't think they make a squat rack at a normal gym production facility. It's probably something more industrial. He's an absolute unit. And, I'd be guessing, but I'm pretty sure that the work on for him has probably been in his work rate in general play. But at the set piece, he's a unit. Absolutely.
And then Don Heumann, Box, scrumming doctor, played 169 matches for Toulouse. After he had played 4 test matches for the Springboks, been at the Cheetahs, been at the Stormers. He would love it that one of his new breed is learning his trade in the top 14 in the dark arts. It doesn't get better than, as Don always says, totally. He learned what the scrum meant when he went and played for Toulouse, won 2 Investec Champions Cup titles with them. He learned it over there and he's brought it back to South Africa and made us the most dominant scrumming unit in world rugby. So he will take a lot from that. But Johan van Graan, we can't talk about that oak enough and what he's achieved with Bath. They were bottom of the table in 2022. He walked in, they had lost by 60 points at home to Saracens. They won a treble last year. They were the Investec Challenge, the EPCR Challenge Cup. They won the Prem. They won the knockout English competition. And everything was, we've got to do well in the Investec Champions Cup. The way they won that game, the composure that they showed, and the cameras kept on going to him. I don't think he changed his expression throughout, even though inside, obviously, it was a range of emotions.
Yeah.
Yet he was the same 2 seasons ago when they lost the Prem final by a couple of points. And he said to Finn Russell, the fly-off, at the side of the field, we'll come back next year and win it. And they did. They went back and won it.
Yeah.
I mean, just purely from a South African point of view, but also from a romantic point of view, it was the right result that Bath went through.
So, I mean, first up, let me just give some respect to Finn Russell. I'm not his biggest fan, but that football tekkers that he showed to tow that ball over and score what was a very important try in that match, massive credit to him. Huge credit to Johan van Graan. The comeback in that game, and the same was the case for Bordeaux, just sort of stripping away from Toulouse in the second half. Those halftime adjustments were clear to see. They kept their composure. Northampton couldn't have had a better start. The ball bounced in their favour. Every move came off. You know, they blinked and they scored a try every single time. So they couldn't have spotted Northampton more of a lead than they did. And to be able to sort of keep your composure, stay on plan, and sort of keep your eyes on the prize and slowly reel them back in and overtake them, that's a hell of a feat in such a massive game.
And kind of just emphasize for me then what he's achieved at that club. Because at 35-14, when it got to 36-28, you just kept on thinking, it was 35-28, and then they went to 38, and you thought, hang on a second, they actually can't come back, Bath.
Yeah.
And they just did. Yeah. And I just felt that showed you the growth of that team. And I'm not saying they're going to go to Bordeaux and beat them, but they're a bloody good side. And credit to Johan van Graan for what he's achieved. And what I've loved about this weekend is we know Russie and how good Russie Rasmus is and what he's done with the Box. We know the quality of coaching we have here. Dobbo, what he's done in Cape Town with the Stormers. Ucker's what we know he can produce. Jake, when he was at the Bulls, the promise of JP Peterson at the Sharks now, and obviously Cash, who's finally his team starting to settle. We are so healthy here, and then you look down to the under 20 levels, even under 18 our schoolboy levels. But to see our coaches internationally leading the way, to see what Franco Smith is doing at Glasgow, Jacques Nienaber, well, it was Nienaber's Leinster that won on Saturday. You know, I wrote a piece for Keir saying the narrative is so misguided on him. When Leinster struggle, it's because he's coming and corrupted, and when they win, Leo Cullen's doing his job again. But Jacques Nienaber has been a benefit to them. It's their second successive semi-final Investec Champions Cup, and under his guidance, they won their first ever in four attempts United Rugby Championship. And then you look at what's happening at Bordeaux with Sean Salby and Heine Adams. And Heine Adams has been in the coaching mix for a lot longer, Sean Salby, the last 2 years. It's just a feel, and then obviously Johan van Kraan. It's a feel-good factor of the – it used to always be New Zealand leading the way. But South Africa, on the field, in the coaching box, we are the country that people look to now.
Yeah. I think Rassie deserves a lot of the credit for that, because I think when the All Blacks were world champions, double world champions, people automatically got street cred from that. If you were a Kiwi coach, whether it's third division or, you know, the Crusaders, when you applied for a job or you were in a conversation with somebody, the fact that you came from the home of the world champions gave you credence. And I think it's very much been the case like that for South African people since 2019, South African rugby folk. That's not to take anything away from those coaches. I think they're all great in their own right. But I certainly think there's some value to that. And I think perhaps there's a familiarity with what they do to what Rassie used to make the box so successful. I think if you come from South Africa, you understand the thinking around our rugby. And I don't think it's difficult to translate that into a club scene when the country that you came from are double world champions. You could say, look, guys, we don't let the tight head touch the ball, and here's why. And people believe you now because you're the world champion. So I think it's quite circular. And I think the box success has definitely helped those coaches, but they've run with the opportunity and they've done very, very well.
I think just for those who would say, and what about Franz Ludeker? We know he's done great things in Japan as well, and we've got lots of good players playing in Japan. Runok here, the latest to go over. Japan is, I think, they should be cut into kind of all the ticker tape parades when we win World Cups, because they've been brilliant for the core of our Springbok squad in terms of longevity, conditioning, fitness. And I think they've also saved Rossi some bucks, because there's no player of national interest money that gets paid to them if they're not in the country. But also highlighting again the value of picking your best players no matter where they are. You look at someone like England back in the day, they didn't pick the two Armitage brothers who were outstanding for Toulon, who were dominant. Not picking Jack Willis, who was Toulouse's player of the year last year, European player of the year. Somewhere he could add such great value. Think of Ribbons. I mean, if England don't want to pick him, I know he's not necessarily on our radar, but wow, you can do worse than pick Dave Ribbons for the Springboks. Player of the match against the Stormers, he led Toulon brilliantly again. Physicality that he showed against Glasgow, because Toulon physically dominated that game. This is a team that's top of the URC, hard to beat on those 4G pictures, where at times a strong scrumming side is that's negated. The physicality is not always there, kind of gets you through a game there. But Dave Ribbons leading them from the front, only Safa in the mix, and it's the only one they needed.
I mean, the Stormers brought Toulon back to life, brought the best out of Dave Ribbons, and he's been playing fantastic rugby. And it's great for the Champions Cup semifinals that the two underdog teams, the travelling teams, are two teams that have just shown they've got massive guts, massive character, never say die. I mean, Toulon, you can't write them off now. I mean, when they went into the game against the Stormers, you thought, oh, the Stormers could win this one in Toulon. Now they've gone and they've beaten the Stormers and they've won again and they're into the semis. And then Bath, that massive comeback against Northampton, just underlining their credentials. It's going to be a hell of a Final Four.
But also showed that everyone's like, oh, you got to play at home, otherwise you're not in this competition. Northampton will think we got 41 points and somehow still lost it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a 41-65 game. It was 41-43. They were in it to win it on 78 minutes. Very few would have given Toulon a chance to go and beat a high-riding Glasgow. They did away from home, especially after their battle against the Stormers. For 55 minutes, Sale were in it, so they got the yellow cards.
Yeah.
And then at 15-5, and it is the great Toulouse, you're thinking it needs something special from a special team, which is Bordeaux, to win it. So on another day, could have been 3 out of 4 away wins in this competition, which is great for the competition. But when I looked at all the performances, Els, and which brings me to Steco, our wonderful partners, we always look for that Steco-Ryobi hybrid moment. We look for the hybrid power tool hero of the week. And before we get to that discussion, as always, the ultimate, the number one hybrid player in world rugby, Andre Esner, as an Andre the Giant. We've always got to introduce him and kind of get the blood boiling before we tell you who our choice is of Steco's hero. And we're talking hybrid power hero of the week.
Some players choose a side. They've always said a back can never be a forward. But with Steco, Ryobi didn't just reinvent the rules. It changed the entire game. Hybrid tools for a hybrid craftsman. Steco, shaping the future. 40 years of Ryobi credibility.
As always, Master, I allow it up to you. And if I feel you getting it completely wrong, no. I'm going to overrule you.
Right, I just loved the Jelly Bear try. You know, it's a great flowing sequence by Bordeaux. And then he fly hacks the ball through, chases up his own kick, even though he won't be the first man there. And the ball comes back to him. It's sort of loose on the edge, and he picks it up and dives over for a famous try. I thought that was a great moment.
It was a great moment, and Jelly Bear grew into that game. There were some really cool moments with Jelly Bear. One was when Intermac picked him up and dumped him in the tackle.
Woke him up.
As he was offloading, and the smile he gave Intermac, it was just like a training run.
Yeah.
Toulouse against Bordeaux. You know, we not always versed in this country. We think of the French national team as the French national team. The All Blacks are the same. But the rivalries that go on there at club and provincial level, it's like when Farida Priet got taken out by Skalkberg and he gave him the wink. You know, like, I'll see you next week in national squad colors and I'll be doing it to the opposition.
Yeah.
But we talk hybrid, and hybrid is a player that kind of does more than one thing on the field. And my initial moment was going to come somewhere from that Northampton game against
Tommy
Saints.
Freeman did everything, mate.
Then I thought, okay, hang on a second. You've got to look at Brex's try against...
Right.
That cut open Glasgow.
Yep.
And anyone that cuts open Glasgow, South Africans love it because they are a team that beats too many of our teams. And then it was like, no. And then I got into Leinster, and it's like, I'm really going to give it to Leinster because I knew they were going to win that game. Although I thought Rico Ioane did a great offload to create a very decisive try for them and then rounded off one, left wing being his best position.
Yep.
And then I just wanted to get Big Ben into it again. My favorite prop forward outside of Oxen Chair and Wilco Lowe.
Incredible.
I'm talking international prop forward.
Yeah.
And he came on his turnover, scored the try.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But then, man, it's got to be your man, Jelly Bear. And we're not discounting what Maxime Luka did.
Yeah.
But Jelly Bear, 17 carries. He made tackles. I mean, Matteo Jelly Bear, it's been his season.
It has
he
been
broke
his season.
Through.
Yeah, no, he's had a hell of a season, and I think he put it all together in that game. We've been saying for some time that Bordeaux halfback combination is probably one that better serves France than Intermac and Dupont, even though individually they may be better than their counterparts at Bordeaux as a combination. And I think that's the point you made. That Bordeaux halfback combo is just superb, and they really stood up massive in that game. Their pack helped. Pack got dominance there. But those two guys used the ball to maximum effect and in every way, you know, kicking for space, kicking for line, releasing the outside backs, bringing the forwards into the game, and then Jelly Bear just finding some space with that hack kick and just making some magic. And the way that he dived over in the end was just like something out of a Hollywood script.
Yeah, so would you like to give him the honors, and we'll ask Steco to courier whatever prize.
He's officially the, what is he going to get, mate? A hamper of horse.
He's going to get a greeting from Andre Esserhazy the next time we play France. And he cuts him in two.
Exactly. Brilliant. So Gemini is our hybrid power tools hero.
Jelly Bear.
Oh, Jelly Bear. I keep on saying those two.
Okay. Sorry. So who? Why do you say this?
I don't know. I don't always say Jaminet when I mean Jelly Bear.
Jaminet played for too long.
Yeah, yeah. He's the fullback.
He needs a haircut as well. He needs to kind of just take it all off. Okay. Yeah. Looking a bit.
He was back
there
this week. Fortunately, he wasn't there when the Stormers were around.
Okay. So the Steco powered by Ryobi hybrid power tool hero of the weekend is
Jaminet. Matthew Jelly Bear.
Jelly Bear, it is a domestic Champions Cup. Go to the EPCR's homepage, all the match stats, and they make for riveting reading.
Yeah.
Go if you play the fantasy games, go see what you've done. First weekend in May is semi-final weekend. We'll be chatting about that close to the time. And obviously the big one, North of Spain, Balboa. It's going to be the finals weekend. That's EPCR Challenge Cup and Investec Champions Cup. We now focus on where the South African future is in this domestic season. It is the United Rugby Championship. That's where we are. We have three teams in the top eight. We've got the Stormers second on the table. We've got the Lions fifth. We've got the Bulls eighth. And we got the Sharks, who've been winning more than losing on the JP Peterson, fighting to get into that top eight. I don't know if they'll make it, but big ones this weekend, especially in Cape Town for you boys. Zells, Connacht, who came off a big, big defeat, which surprised me in the EPCR Challenge Cup quarterfinals. Yep. The Bulls are away from home. We've really got to make it count, biasly, from a Cape Town point of view. It's Connacht, and then it's also Franco Smith, Glasgow, who are going to bring their best team now, because that's the only competition they can win now, is the URC. No excuses anymore for South African teams. There's no other competitions to play.
Yeah, this is it. So the URC is where the trophies are at right now, and or the only trophy that's remaining for the South African sides. Like you say, we've got three teams that are serious contenders. The Bulls are in the top eight, and we're hoping that the Sharks claw their way in there. It's 10 plays 11 this week. Sharks at Ospreys. And you got the Bulls at Dragons. The Dragons are a sneaky, difficult team. I mean, they're languishing in 15th place, so you think they'd be easy runovers, but they're not. They've got their own little hitches that they can catch you with. And then log leaders, Glasgow, they're in action at Ellis Park against the Lions, and the Stormers host Connacht. Some great matchups. Connacht, very, very good physical team. Ask you some very direct questions. They're going to be tough to beat. And so we're hoping for classic four from four, por favor.
We will be chatting on our WhatsApp channels and on our social media channels about what we think could happen, and we know what we want to happen. Obviously, always it's South African wins all around the park, but we kind of reflected this week on just what happened this week in the Investec Champions Cup, and knowing that we are back, no more confusion with the punters either. We are back to URC rugby this weekend, and big, big games, primarily for the top three, and that is the Stormers, the Bulls, and the Lions. And I know you're going to say, but why did you mention the Bulls first? Because I really like the Bulls, but I do like the Lions as well, and we have to mention the Sharks, but they are top eight. Okay? But looking at the Saffers, we speak Europe the whole time. If you guys have forgotten about him, out of sight, can't be out of mind.
Manila Bok. Say it. What?
Manila Bok.
Been doing good things.
Zals, I know that you like head down with the Stormers these days, but as a
I haven't
former...
haven't been following the Japanese at all, mate.
As the former head of
I saw some headlines.
Money magic on show in Japan.
What's he been, why do you say it like that?
I don't know.
Don't forget to drink your water.
He's not playing in the IPR, mate. He's playing in Japan. Okay. Manila Bok.
Yes.
Manila Bok plays for the Liners, the Kintetsu Liners, and they played the Haino Red Dolphins in Tokyo.
Oh, the Red Dolphins, mate. We love them.
They won 77-36. And Manila Bok's got 37 points.
Wow.
37 points.
Sure, that's incredible.
He scored a hat-trick of tries, and this, he kicked 11 from 11. 11 from 11.
Did he score all of them under the poles, or what?
Well, he must have, because he scored three of them. So a great, great win there. And yeah. I love their names here. The Liners next face the third placed Shimizu Koto Blue Sharks.
He said that perfectly.
So, Manila Bok, okay, Saffers abroad.
Oh, fabulous.
We know how well the boys in the Japanese League One, First Division are doing there. The Colbys, the Damien DeLandes. Just Franco Mostyn makes so many tackles. They always when he plays there. Kwaga Smith, there's just so many good South Africans playing there. Jesse Greel.
Puff the Clacks on his way home, mate.
Coming to the Cheetahs, mate. What a great signing, okay?
What a signing.
And he's starting to play well all of a sudden. He must know that he's coming home, okay? Don't forget about Fuffy. So always good to let people know that there's Andre Potter, there's Sasha Feinberg, Ngoma Zulu, but guess what, guys? There's also Imani Lebok, and we don't ever forget him, okay? Imani Lebok, one of the great schoolboy projects. We always like to thank Burger Ken because they've come on board. We've aligned them with our school sponsorship because if you love chicken, I tell you, you don't love it more than if you're a schoolboy. But never spared it.
No, you didn't.
Stellenberg, 10-0 down at halftime at home against Polaris. They win 20-10. They've now knocked over 1, 2, and basically 3 in South African schools. They are officially for us here on the Key and Zell Show. They are the best first team right now on this day in South Africa. They've recorded those wins. And no, Hartsfontein, you can't say, but we beat them by a point. They are an incredible to see what they've achieved. I did have a glance at the under-16s, under-15s, under-14As, and I fear it could be a barren 5 years for them. Because they all took big ones against Polaris. Yeah. But for the first team to do that, their coaching staff has been together for 15 years. The school's 40 years old. They've been together for 15 years. Gary van Lochenberg, big sponsor at the school there, threw his money behind Stellenberg, threw his company, threw his money behind the Boland Cavaliers as well. But just great in the northern suburbs. People ask, what's changed? The Oaks aren't going to Boys Eichem. They're just staying in Stellenberg and going to school around the corner. But a great, great win for them. Paul Jim went and beat Afis, scored 50 points against him in Pretoria. A great win. Anything that you've got to add from your school's weekend? Were you just head down?
I was just watching the Japanese rugby, mate. So the head coach of Stellenberg is Divan Batts. I used to play a lot of touch rugby with Divan, and he was a fabulous, fabulous touch rugby player. He played for the team called the Nomads, and they were very successful. Used to sort of run the summer beach leagues. They used to win it all the time. And I'm very, very glad to see he's doing so well at Stellenberg. Obviously, like you said, that coaching team's been together for a long time. And the rewards of that continuity and consistency seem to be coming through at the school. So hopefully that barren spell you mentioned isn't just around the corner. It's great to see that the gap is closing on the classic traditional big schools in South Africa, that there are some upstarts coming in there and kind of challenging them for those places. And I think that just speaks to the depth and width of South African schoolboy rugby. We've got so much talent here.
So much talent. Stellenberg, they call them the J Brigade. And they really... They are cooking.
Yeah.
They are cooking.
Yeah.
Mate, in the Western Cape, I had to break the news to
Mullerton. Lost again.
They lost again at home.
I saw that.
So, you know, that drought's coming. They had a good side for a while. The big story, obviously, Durnville edge sacks, 20 points to 18. Otanikwa, 34-24 against Boland Lumpo. Weinberg, 27-17. They got one over Rondebosch. Those Southern Suburbs derbies are starting. Paul Boys, 13, all against Oakdale. Obviously, always a big game. Then in the Eastern Cape, there were wins for Queens. There were wins for Pearson against Selborne. Daniel Pienaar lost to Framsby. Grey High beat Dale. Sterling, they were the ones who lost to Queens. And then obviously, Port Rex went down to Graham, 48-10. Up north, because they say we're so biased down in Cape Town.
What happened with Kez? Did they win?
Just relax. I'm getting there, okay? Vaderkloof, 71. And Nelspruit, 32. Swartkop won, Westfalia won, Hartiest Middelburg, they beat Ichi Janssen 46-31. That's always a big game. Middelburg drew 40 all against Benfoss in a super rugby game. St. John's beat Rangers Vincentia. And then the one you asked about, mate, Cares against JP. Mark Alexander was there. He said there were thousands.
That is a big game.
Thousands. Malcolm Marks, he sent messages of support from Japan to the boys. Shaman was there, Mike Shaman in all his glory. And I said to him in a text message, I said, Shami, I hear that it was raining tries in Shaman's corner. And his response was, pity they were JP tries. So to Craig Ray, who went to JP, Simulani, Wandiseli went to Jeppy. Jake White, Jeppy. Jeppy won that 31-24 at Cares. But a wonderful, wonderful day. Wonderful day, wonderful derby, that there is life beyond Paul, and that there is life beyond the Western Cape when it comes to schools rugby. But here's an interesting thing. The Bulls have announced their recruitment drive out of the under-18s, and they announced 14 of their players, of the top players in the country. And in a historic moment, only three are from the Western Cape.
Sure.
They've left the rest behind.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Only three. Normally it's 12.
That's okay. The way it should be.
Yeah, but I do see that $6 million being spent on schoolboy rugby. There's so much money in that schoolboy rugby at the moment. Go to SA Rugby Magazine. You'll see the story there. I just saw the headline popping while we were filming. Also saw lots popping in about Super Rugby. And the game I watched, and I watched it with great interest.
Canes Blues,
because of that, because they're wearing that, it's the 30-year anniversary, they're wearing the traditional strip.
I also watched that.
And what did you make of the game,
mate? I thought it was great, man. Hurricanes really blew them away. I mean, at the beginning, I thought it was going to be quite even. I thought Auckland might actually win it, and then the Hurricanes just switched on, and those outside backs just became unstoppable, mate. That Oak on the left wing was just cutting them to pieces. So they're in good health there, the Hurricanes. And I think if you look at some of the players in those two squads that you haven't heard of, I think those are the guys that Rennie's going to start looking at to beef up the All Blacks. I think there's a few names there that'll be new names in the All Blacks squad this year.
We talk about World Cups, and we say the best time to appoint a coach is 18 months before a World Cup, because he has to go out and
Bingo.
Win. There's not a four-year cycle and planning
Correct.
And that. I believe by default they've stumbled upon the right guy, Dave Rennie. And I think we've spoken at length about that. But post his announcement, there just seems to have been an intensity that's gone up with those New Zealand sides. And I'm not just talking about the established old guard, the boys that have been around forever. Just some of those youngsters who may feel now they've got a crack at it, and there's not going to be a Southern South Island biased or Crusaders biased, because, you know, as good a coach as he was at Super Rugby level, we look at when Heine Kamei was coaching the Bulls, and then he refused to pick a Lions player, and he just felt the Bulls players were the way to go. When he went to the 2015 World Cup, there was just this feeling of Scott Robertson had seen enough at Super Rugby level to dismiss a player's claims to his national setup. And Rennie has been in Australia coaching the Wallabies. Before that, he was in Glasgow coaching the Warriors. And then he's been in Japan. He's been away for nearly 9 years. He doesn't see Chiefs, Crusaders, Blues, Highlanders. He just sees the best that New Zealand's got eligible to him. I think they can pick a very good squad. They can pick some good players. I think they're bringing 40-plus players to South Africa for those four midweek games, and then the three tests here and the one in Baltimore. I've been impressed with just, like you say, some of their new talent.
Well, I think the message has gone out that nobody's safe in All Blacks rugby. I think the message has gone out that jobs are up for grabs. And I think for some of the younger players, you know, they don't necessarily have the credentials of the three Barrett brothers. So what they do have is playing time right now and to try and catch the eye of Dave Rennie in Super Rugby. So I think a lot of those guys are taking that opportunity, as you mentioned. I think we both agree that if Richie Mo'unga had been in the mix, the All Blacks probably would have fared a lot better during Razor's tenure. And I think what Rennie's going to do is he's going to find the guys that we questioned, you know, where are the locks? Where are the back rows bruisers? Not just the workmanlike guys, the physical guys that can go forward. I think Rennie's going to answer those questions. Those guys are lurking there in Super Rugby, and maybe not the most heralded players, but those names will be household names in the future.
Well, everyone who has watched, I think we are on like 170 shows or something, maybe even more, from the early days, Dave Rennie was still coaching the Wallabies back in those days, and his biggest supporter was you, Zels.
You're setting me up for a fail, mate.
No, but you kept on saying, this guy's got it. I mean, what has it been about Dave Rennie that's always impressed you?
I think you get different kinds of coaches, and I think Rennie is the kind of coach that is an actions kind of guy. So he doesn't care if you could talk a great game. He wants you to play a great game. And how he ranks a great game, if you look at some of his teams, that Chiefs team that we spoke about had some electric players in it, right? But at the core of it was brute force. It was physicality. And I don't mean that they played boring rugby. What I mean is every collision was an opportunity for them to assert their physical dominance over their opponents. And I think that is a reflection of Dave Rennie's coaching philosophy, his style. And so he's not going to be interested in guys who, you know, run to the teacher at the front of the class. I made four offloads. He wants to know how many guys did you blat in contact. I think that's going to be on his radar. And I think that immediately makes the All Blacks more ferocious. Rugby's a game that is about physicality. The other stuff is downstream from it. If the All Blacks start to add that to their game, they are going to bounce back.
Because you go back and you look at Robinson, and what Razor kept on saying is, we one pass away from playing a new style game. We one pass away from, it was about a game that the world hadn't seen. Steve Hansen spoke a bit about that in 2019, and the game we hadn't seen was them getting ragdolled by England in a semi-final. Yeah. Like manhandled, okay? Yeah. Where Rennie's never been about that. Rennie has been about picking some mongrels, picking some dogs, getting under your skin. 18 wins in 24 against South African opposition when he was the Chiefs coach. Back-to-back titles for them, and inclusive of two quarterfinal wins in South Africa, both times against the Stormers, back-to-back. One of them, 61 points that they scored against. So a Stormers side that had seven future World Cup winning Springboks, including the likes of Siya Kolisi, I think Dwayne Vermeulen, Eben Etzebeth. There was a Frans Malherbe, Stephen Kitsoff, big dogs in that Stormers team. He loves the physical confrontation of a South African team. His under-20s played the Bok under-20s. He won that title, the world title, three times in a row. They played them in the third final, 38-7. And three tests that he was in charge of the Wallabies in four against the Boks. But when they played in Australia because of COVID restrictions, he got three wins out of those four. And I remember that one when they outscored us four tries to three, and it was four tries to two at one stage. In Brisbane, they physically got under our skin. And it's like seeing an Australian side starting to knock us off the ball and antagonize us. And really got that right for that team. And at the time, you were saying that they're that close to being a contender for the World Cup. And then he picked a B team to play Italy, potentially underestimated the growth that Italy had made, lost. And they just said,
cheers.
Here comes your mate, Eddie, who blew the whole place up, okay?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, no, I mean, all of those points, I don't know how you remember all those facts, but yes, that's exactly it with Dave Rennie and the physicality. And I think the irony, or you know, if you follow the game, it's not maybe not so much of a surprise, but during Rennie's tenure when Waikato, when the Chiefs were so physical and so sort of abrasive and aggressive, the outside backs broke records for scoring tries. I don't know if you remember Lelia Masanga.
Winner.
What a player. You know, that guy came through. That they mashed the Oaks up front. And they weren't shy to tell them that that's what they were going to do. And the result was they were a magnet for just absorbing defenders. And there was massive clashes between heavyweights. And then the ball got spun wide and the little guy scored in the corner at volume.
And talking about him, they were on the breakdown, which I do enjoy watching. And especially because Stephen Donald is on it. And they spoke about the best dance moves, okay? The best dance moves. And obviously, they try celebrations. He was right up there when he used to score with his dance moves. But I did enjoy a Beaver with Kirsty, or Kirst. And they've been doing a lot of 30-year celebrations on Super Rugby. And they asked him for his... Every week, they have a Super Rugby moment. Beaver came up with... came up with South Africa, mate. And he came up with... I dig his voice. I mean, I think he's just a... he's great value, and he's so understated and dry. And,
yeah.
And he spoke about his mate, Obana. And Brian Obana's try against the Sharks to win the game after the Sharks missed the conversion. And then just a fantastic bit of individual brilliance. And he keeps on saying, we miss our South African friends. Eh? And they do. I mean, I would just say, I also miss them. Eh? I miss kind of having the Crusaders in Cape Town and the Hurricanes and the Chiefs. The Chiefs became one of our favorite teams, especially when Sonny Bill was playing there, bro.
exactly.
When Sonny Bill was there and just people loving him in the Chiefs' colors. You know, when Sonny Bill came to Newlands, he came here as a Crusader. He had a great game. He came here as a Chief and he was electric, and then he came here as a Blue. We didn't really care.
Mate, the only time I've seen South African kids so excited for a foreigner was when I was a kid and David Hasselhoff came to Durban, mate. I mean, Oaks went mad for Sonny Bill Williams. The queues and the throngs of people, even at the media engagements, they would find out where the media engagements were and people were there to see him. It was like they just wanted to touch some magic.
No, he was incredible. And near the tail end of his career, it was always, could we get the big coup and get him here for a year?
Yeah.
Imagine he had been playing just one season for the Stormers. That would have been incredible.
Yeah.
So to our mates in New Zealand, we do miss you guys. We do follow you closely. Those early Friday and Saturday mornings watching the games. And I know that rugby's greatest rivalry tour is, it's back to that. There's just a buzz about New Zealand rugby with the new appointments. There's an element that we're going to see the real men in black in South Africa. And I think that is just fantastic, fantastic for the game. Lots to be joyful about at the moment. Getting goosebumps just thinking about that. But equally goosebumps, not on a joyful moment. A very sad last 10 days. Two big giants have fallen. One to the Lowe family, to Wilco Lowe, to his mom Teresa, to all the kids and the grandkids. Maurice Lowe, Wilco's dad. You know, any passing is tragic. He passed away 10 days ago. Our condolences to the family. We chat a lot to the mom, Teresa. She's a huge fan of the show. I had the privilege of meeting Maurice and Teresa and the rest of the family last year when Wilco came on 42 minutes and destroyed the Wallaby scrum. We were chanting his name every time he sat on that chair and got up. And they came over and said hello at the press box. And it's a lovely photo that we took of them. And they were looking for you that day, Zells. And I said, Zells is comfortably stashed away in Bloberg doing some fishing or something like that. But yeah, just Wilco put in the most beautiful tribute to his dad online as well. We know they've been ill for some time. Mm. The Stormers Bulls game, Teresa had sent us a message and said, can you get some video footage of Wilco scrumming? His dad's laying in hospital and he can't watch the game. You took the footage, Sals, and sent it to her. And they were just so grateful. And it's just a beautiful family. Mm. And our thoughts go out to Wilco and to Teresa and to the rest of the family. And you know, Marius, rest in peace.
Yeah.
And thanks again for that footage. I mean, I reckon that's the last footage that his dad got to see of him play.
No, don't say that. Oof. Hectic. Just hectic. You know, it's just sad, sad news. So, yeah, obviously our thoughts and our prayers are with the Lowe family.
And then you guys, wow, it's hectic weekend, eh?
Yeah, no, it's been rough. Long-time team manager and basically sort of paternal member of the Stormers management team, Chippy Solomon, passed away on Saturday morning. Just a huge, huge, obviously shock loss. It's not like he was ill or anything. And it's been rough. It's been rough on the team, obviously, and for the management team. Those guys have, I mean, I've known Chippy for a long time as a journalist. Haven't worked with Chippy per se. These guys have traveled all over the world with Chippy, and the players leaned heavily on him, you know, logistically and for support. So it's a massive, massive loss. Team's very ripped up about it. And it's not something, yeah, even though I wasn't sort of close, as close to Chippy as they were, he's a guy that I would pop in and say hi to at the office. Often we would talk about his family, very, very proud of his family. Obviously, I remember covering Chad Solomon as a player, and we would talk about him and his life and how he's doing. And, you know, really, really strong family man. He had a hard exterior to Chippy Solomon. Once you got to know him, that was probably one of his more endearing features. And behind that was just a really lovely guy. So huge loss.
Yeah. And then the only way to celebrate a fallen tree is to acknowledge and to make lots of noise. And I know that sport and rugby has this tradition of a minute silence. And I did a piece on the blog and I said, Chippy Solomon doesn't deserve silence. He warrants noise. Lots of noise, lots of cheering, lots of record breaking. And he would have been the first to go out and say, in the next two games against Connacht and against Glasgow at the DHL Stadium, combined, they need 27,000 people there to break the record for a season of most attended for Stormers season. And forget about just doing it for the team. Do it for Chippy. The way to celebrate what that guy gave the Stormers, 350 games from 2004, that he was the manager, the generation of players that he's seen come and go, that he's been a mentor and a father to, a friend and a guide. Go out and celebrate Chippy this Saturday afternoon when the Stormers host Connacht. They get the 5 points. You can guarantee those players are playing for him. They're playing for his family. So, yes, it's somber. It's crushing news. but the celebration must be around what this incredible man achieved. And on Saturday morning, a lot of messages came through to me, but the most appropriate way to end our show today, with the greatest respect to the Solomon family in this trying week, and to the Stormers Rugby Fraternity and Western Province. It has to be the emotionally charged voice note I got from John Dobson, Dobbo, the Stormers coach. And if you ask anyone who can pay tribute to Chippy Solomon, it would be Dobbo. And I asked Dobbo, and he sent this to me as a mate. And I asked him, do you mind if we play it with the show, with myself and Zells? And he said, not at all. I think Chippy would have enjoyed it. So we'll chat to you guys later in the week. This is from Dobbo to me about Chippy. And it could be from Dobbo to all of you who love rugby and want to acknowledge the man.
You know, what a man. I mean, the biggest Stormer of all, the biggest person. I mean, things won't be the same. Can't say much more than something, you know, about tribute to somebody's impact. You think you're growing up in Newlands, evicted group areas, sent down to Bontehuvel, massive contribution to school, sport in Mitchell's Plain, a teacher, goes, you know, rugby in his own right, then forges off his life, which sees, you know, his daughter become a physiotherapist, which is fine. His wife become a highly respected teacher, but the son becomes a, you know, goes to Paul Lewis and UCT, and graduates in finance from a kid from Bontehuvel. And what he meant to those players. I mean, he's a story of triumph in South African sports, is Chippy Solomon. I'm going to miss him so much, Kia. I loved him. And this is not going to be, I promise you, whatever else, it's not going to be the same.